Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 15 of season 5. This one is called Power Play. Directed by David Livingston, teleplay goes to Renee Balser, Herbert Wright, and Brennan Braga. Story credit goes to Paul Rubin and our old friend Maurice Hurley. Aired back on February 22nd, 1992. In this one, Troy, Data, and O'Brien are taken over by three alien entities, and they seize control of the Enterprise. Modi's here to talk about this one, so right after this break, me and Modi are going to go deep on Power Play.
Ten forward. This is Captain Picard. I am prepared to discuss this situation. There is no need for further violence. Please identify yourself.
They will now attempt to negotiate for the safety and release of their people. Interesting. Under normal circumstances, I would be counseling the captain at a time like this.
And what would you tell him to do?
I would help him find a way to secure our trust.
What are you looking at? You, Klingon. Attack me. Are you afraid?
I have no fear of death.
And I have no fear of killing you.
Stop it!
So Power Play is kind of a fun episode.
It is, yeah.
I think I underappreciate this one. I think I don't look at as fondly as I should at this episode. I think that's changed with this recent viewing. It's probably the best pure action episode that they've done.
A lot of action.
Yeah, a lot of action. A lot of people getting shot with phasers, which really highlights the fact that warfare in the 24th century doesn't seem really great. You just run in and shoot without any sort of cover.
Zap. Yeah.
And the aliens can always get take a couple phaser shots, of course, because that makes sense for whatever reason.
Right.
I think the weirdest thing about this one is that it makes sense in terms of narrative, but it's they picked a very eclectic group to get taken over by the aliens.
They did, yes. I don't quite know why. I guess they couldn't take Riker was part of the deal. I was wondering why they didn't accept Riker. At first I thought, because he's injured. But then they explained in the episode that it's because his pain receptors were not allowing them to enter him.
Yeah.
And I guess that's a reasonable explanation, but we'd like to see that maybe also.
It certainly allows them to... the pain thing gives them a way out of it. My one note was, why did they trust Riker? I thought that something they could have done was been like, hey, you were down there too. Like, get him in the brig and he'd be, you know, it would be another way to eliminate another character from helping you. They don't do that. They just intrinsically trust him. But that's fine. O'Brien is really sort of the wild card, and I think they do it largely just to get around the fact that they can't use the transporters because he shuts down the transporters.
That could be it, yeah. It's a kind of an odd choice that, like, it was the rare away mission for O'Brien, I thought. Like,
yeah.
Wow, this is the first time he's probably ever gone down to the planet on the series, I think, actually.
And he goes on a what Geordi calls a coin flip as to whether or not he's going to make it. He does not say goodbye to his wife and child. He
just true too, yeah. They have no idea.
He just steps on the thing so calm and cool, which is Star Trek to a T, I think.
Time was of the essence. No time to say goodbye to your family.
No. Yeah, I think it's the first time we've seen him. I like it. I think he does a good job. It also gives them a good, you know, he's the only one with an actual family on board.
True.
Since Wesley is gone, Beverly was the last one to have like a kid or anything. So they do it for that. But I really do feel it's largely just to get around the fact that he makes the transporters not work, which I think this episode does a really good job of. There's a lot of ways in this future technology you could conceivably get around this problem.
Right.
And this episode, it doesn't egregiously stick out to me. Like, why didn't they just do that?
Yeah, it feels like they were aware of that, actually. Like, you know, they had to like, make up a bunch of stuff in order to get this to work.
Yeah.
Like, their whole, like, you know, pulse last thing they did to solve it. It's like, it's just pull, cut from whole cloth, because they had to come up with, like, something that no one would expect them to do.
Yeah, in a very, in a very sort of old style, like if this was just like a Die Hard movie, you'd kind of see, the, like you drill a hole in the ceiling, you know, that's like, it feels very sort of primitive at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it continues the, it's remarkably easy to take over the ship thing. Data always seems to be central to doing it, but it's very possible to take over the Enterprise.
It's remarkably easy for Deanna to knock Picard unconscious.
Yes. Yeah.
Just a slug to the back with both your hands does the job.
I guess we're supposed to, well, no, we don't. We can't assume that they have super strength. They have, like, invulnerability to phaser fire, as we mentioned, but I don't.
O'Brien beats up Worf. Deanna beats up Picard.
Oh, Data
that's
Data
can beat
right,
up anybody, but, like, that's normal. But, like, I had problems with Deanna overpowering Picard and O'Brien beating Worf.
Yeah, well, O'Brien, well, I guess, yeah, it is. O'Brien's is more understandable because he just knocks him over the balcony, which I can
That's
see
true.
Being a little bit. But
catches him off guard, maybe. But
yeah, yeah.
It just so I laughed for a solid 5 minutes. I had to pause the show when Deanna slugs Picard in the back with both her hands, and he just goes, and he falls over.
he goes so down hilarious. Like a sack of potatoes. I also
his
like
face
his
he makes this fantastic.
His reaction to it's like a full blown war on the bridge, and he's just like, hey, what's going on out there? Just walks to the door and gets clobbered down. The other thing that's kind of funny about this, I just wanted to mention it before we go a little bit deeper, is that this is another, this is kind of a criticism, but it's another thing that the show seems to do where they bring up a storyline that's a fabrication. In this case, it's the storyline of this. These are the ghosts of the Essex crew.
Mm-hmm.
And the show has our characters never for a minute believe that that's what's going on. So it almost seems pointless to do in a way. And I was thinking that the idea that this planet or this moon is a penal colony for an alien species is like a really cool idea that I wish they just acknowledged up front.
Yeah.
I don't know what point of hiding it behind. We are the crew of the Essex and we're also very violent. So you better do what we say.
I guess it was to delay the reveal, I guess, of what they're doing, because I mean there's no way that they would have cooperated. As Picard says, if you guys just asked, we would have helped you, you know
right.
what I mean, like, but there need to be some other reason. I mean,
I guess you get around it because it is a prison, like they are prisoners, you know, it's like
right.
I think I would have just preferred. I understand what you're saying. It's like it's a shot. It's like a reveal or whatever. But I think the idea is cool enough where I would have bought if they had just taken over the ship and been like, "This is what we're going to do," because Picard's still in a place where he has to do it because they're going to start executing hostages.
That's true. It doesn't matter if the crew of the Essex or not. If he's got his crew in danger either way,
right?
It doesn't
change any of the storyline.
No, not really.
And it would have allowed. I think the other minor like problem here, it's not even a problem, I would have changed this slightly. I feel that all the prisoner aliens are kind of written the same, and I wish they were a little bit more dissimilar from each other. Like none of them is a clearly raving psychotic lunatic, which I think would have been understandable.
The closest is probably the guy that has Data, because he wants to pick a fight with Worf.
Right, he wants to pick a fight
on principle.
Yes, yeah. But they're all he's still restrained. You know, he's not like a loose cannon where you'd, if you would flesh them out a little bit, like I can see Deanna being the sort of rational one, you know.
Yeah, she was.
Data being
well,
crazy.
O'Brien's also is like getting weird with Keiko.
Yeah, he's a little bit inappropriate, I guess.
Yeah, like he's like a little scary. So it's like, you know, I guess maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I think
they're all kind of different.
I think they are. And it's mostly they're different. The show wrote them as different through the interactions that they have with people. Personality-wise, they're all kind of like sneeringly evil.
Right.
Which I don't mind. I think they all
mustache do. Mustache twirling.
Right. They're very mustache twirling, which I don't really mind. It leads to the great scene with the interaction with Data and Worf, where they pick a fight with each other. I love that scene.
Yeah, that was great.
Data about to choke slam Picard is another interesting moment. And outside of that, I think it's just sort of like a really, it's a very enjoyable episode to watch.
It's got a lot of cool tense action going on. There's, I was picturing the shot of the three, you know, people who are taking it over, walking down the corridors with the with the phasers out. Like, yep. That's something you don't ever see on this show. You know, that shot never happens.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
That was really cool to see.
It's a good. It gives the crew a chance to stretch out a little bit. We talked about Conundrum, which is airing before this one, where the show's kind of at a point now where audiences are familiar enough with the show to buy a plot that sort of flips around what your expectations are of mm-hmm. the show. Like, you can't really do that in the first season because no one knows what the characters are all about.
Right, yeah.
So they've started to do that more. In Conundrum, they do it much bigger than here, but they still do the same thing here where your character expectations are flipped around.
Everybody has something to do in this episode, I thought, too. All the actors had some good stuff to do.
Yeah. Yeah, Geordi's drilling the hole. Like, Troy is taking over. Data, Picard, Riker takes control of the bridge. Worf.
Beverly gets the least, I think. Actually, I'm thinking about it. There's a spot where Picard orders her to do something, and she just walks off, doesn't say another word. Like, I don't know. Like, she's like, she didn't give her a lot, actually, now I'm thinking about it.
I think they had
But everybody else has something to do.
She had to prepare medical teams to go in to take care of the
people. And then just walks away, doesn't say anything.
Who got shot by the phasers in the first place. Yeah, it's... The other sort of minor thing is, I guess the communicators are how you transport people. It's a continuing idea that the show does.
Yeah.
Like, if you lose your communicator, the show just can't track you, or the ship can't track you,
it's a lock on thing is how I always take it. Like, mm-hmm. it's how you can tell where somebody is based on that communicator.
Yep. Yeah.
Because they had the thing where they're going down the elevator and it's just those things in there. And so it's like, again, it's something that only can exist on the show, but it doesn't exist very often.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's an enjoyable episode. Did you have any major qualms with it, or did you think anything was a little bit off?
No, I think like it's like you've been saying. I mean, I like that. I kind of wish Deanna played it a little differently. Is she using her normal accent in this? Because that would have been interesting.
No, she's not.
If she could have just switched to her normal accent.
Yeah, that's true.
When the person takes her over, and that would have been like, oh, something's different. Like. And now she can actually sound like a person, and she actually maybe even like act a little bit better because she doesn't have to do the stupid accent.
Yeah, I feel this was a tough episode for her. I think this was an episode that kind of showed her.
Though.
I think she's fine. It might have been. It's a tiny, I think, of the writing where it's like they're a little bit too reserved. She had been well. I mean, her character makes sense as reserved. I feel it is probably her accent work. It makes the lines come out a little bit stilted.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
so.
I think if they would just let her do her normal accent and been like, you know what, this is not the same person now, because that's why she sounds totally different. It's not a person in control. And they could have done that, and then she would have been able to perform, you know, even to a higher degree, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But because she was still doing the Deanna voice, it didn't work for me too much. But
yeah, it comes
overall, I think she was good, though. This is one of the better Deanna episodes, actually.
Yeah, I think it's a good one for her. I think Brent Spiner did a good job. He didn't go too mm-hmm. hammy, which is kind of a danger.
He was close, actually. Now I'm thinking about it. Yeah, he was actually pretty close to... Like, as soon as... Yeah, I don't know what he gets. I don't know what he gets in his... Like, but he's so... Maybe this is how good an actor he is, but, like, as soon as he comes back to the ship, his mannerisms are totally different already. Like,
yeah,
he's such a... I don't know if he's method or what, but, like... His facial expression is not Data's facial expression from the start.
Right.
Like,
yep.
He just looks different when he's entering commands and stuff. It's like, how does he have that kind of control? But, it's a credit to him as an actor because he can do that. But at the same time, it's like immediately I'm like, oh, that's not Data. It doesn't look like Data. Even though it looks like Data, it doesn't look like Data.
Yeah, that's true because that is kind of true. I mean, I guess they wanted to kind of hint at something has gone wrong, but it's funny because Troy does not play it that way, or Sirtis does not. She plays it much more. Her storyline is sort of not her storyline, but her justification, where she's explaining to Picard that she's like, I felt voices calling for me to go to the polar hemisphere or whatever. And I think it's kind of a neat writing thing where she, you know, after they take over the ship, she kind of chastises the Data character saying, why did you do it? Like Picard would, I was about to get Picard to do it like peacefully. So I guess you could say that's the kind of difference between the characters. The entity that takes over Data is a little bit more rash and unwilling mm-hmm. to wait for things to happen.
He just does it after, right. He blows her cover, too. Yeah, he kind of sets the whole thing in motion because he blows her cover.
Yes, yep. By just taking helm control and just moving the ship over, and that causes O'Brien to. You know something's up when O'Brien reports to the bridge for no particular reason either, right? hangs out in the back like that.
Again, O'Brien doing stuff outside of the ordinary, going down as an away mission, just in general, doing more than usual.
Yep.
It was a problem, probably.
He was in the best of both worlds just because LeVar Burton had surgery when they were shooting that, so O'Brien has the Geordi role of, looking at the computer printouts and everything.
Oh.
So that's always a good sign when he's there. It's
fun, though.
I enjoy him, though. Yeah, when he beams down with Riker, you really get a sense that he's, the most realistic in terms of, just being a normal guy. He beams down and talks about his family and is like, fucking wife is nagging me or whatever he's complaining about. And Riker's just like, well, let's get the hell out of here. But he's the most natural.
He's charming.
Yeah, he is charming. That curly-haired devil. He's, So what'd you think of 10 Forward being the place that they took over? I assume you could have them take over engineering would be the other option.
Not enough people, though, I guess was the idea, though. They don't have bigger risks, bigger stakes. And they knew where to go. They knew where there'd be hostages. So they went to the 10 Forward. I liked it as a thing.
As a destination. I think so. You have, because Keiko wouldn't be in engineering just hanging around for no particular reason. So that does make a lot of sense. The resolution where Picard just says we'd be willing to die. Everyone, you inhabiting these bodies knows that's true. What'd you think of the ending here?
I did like the ending, actually. I kind of like that they're just sending them back to do this to somebody else, first of all.
Yeah.
They're just letting, go back down there. I mean, it's a good punishment, but, and that might be, I was just thinking that might be the reason that they used the Essex as the beginning point, because if it was a penal colony from the start, I don't think the crew would have checked that out necessarily. Oh, there's people down there. It's like, okay, we don't care. And moved on.
Right.
Because it was the Essex. They have a reason to go down there, which was lucky for those, prisoners, apparently. But
that's true. Yeah, they need the Essex there to invest. Well, yeah, the Essex, I guess they felt they just had to tie the Essex in because the distress beacon is why they go there in the first place.
And they need to explain that distress beacon.
Right,
And they said, the Essex went down here. That must be it. So they make a jump of... I'm jumping to conclusion there.
Yeah.
But as far as the ending goes, I think I really did like it. How they all lined up and were like, we're all willing to die, and so are the people you're inhabiting, so do what you got to do. You're more scared to die than we are.
Yeah, I think their argument made sense. It felt a little bit quick. I felt like the prisoners... I felt for the kind of prisoners that we were being portrayed, they cared about the other prisoners almost too much. You know what I mean?
True.
That was kind of a weird thing, but I mean, they have to get rid of them at that point. I didn't mind.
I would like to see the Rogues ending of the Deanna prisoner, kind of betraying the other two. I mean, you know what? Just take me.
Right.
Let's send them back. Yep. I will. I can be controlled. I can be reasonable. And then having them go ballistic at getting sent behind, and because they're the unstable ones. And taking each other out is the kind of the Rogues ending of this.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually thinking the other way you could have gone with it is if one of the prisoners is not as bad, and he becomes the one that flips everything around and then kind of dies at the end or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm thinking that would be for the Deanna Troi's prisoner character.
Yeah. I think I prefer it this way, where they're all bad.
They're all stuck together.
Yeah, I agree that I like the ending. The rationale for what they do makes sense. The plot where Picard's just blow out the shuttle bay if everything goes wrong is good. I feel like the prisoners give up a little easily. One of them should have been thrown into the transporter beam or something. One of them should have not wanted to go along with the plan of just immediately getting beamed back to the surface.
Yeah. One of them should have tried to fight a little harder, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe the O'Brien, so that makes sense that Worf could, overpower him or something like that.
Yeah. I liked the writing here quite a bit. I think the only problem I have with the plot is that they introduce a plan B in the first act, and you're already okay, so plan A is not going to work then, right? Because you're already telling us about a plan B, so...
What's plan B, Picard?
Well, plan B was Picard, wait for my signal.
Oh, sure.
I'll give you an opportunity. And it's so we know that plan A is not going to work then, because you're saying plan. You're giving the cue for plan B then.
I appreciate that Picard did not arouse any suspicion when he's like, Commander Riker,
opportunity.
Perfectly follow this plan. Like when he's talking over the intercom in front of them, we will make sure that they accomplish what they want. It's, yeah. It's like you're kind
of
showing your
hand. We have to take advantage of this opportunity.
As we walk to the shuttle bay. So it's it was a little bit on the nose there, but there's a certain point where you have to inform the audience, even though I think it's obviously clear. Yeah. They also did the fake out of, they realize it immediately, but they're like, turn off all the transporters, and then Ro slams her hands down.
There's a bit much of that going on, though, of solving problems that we're not aware of kind of thing, I guess, is how to explain it. They do this on Star Trek quite a bit. Like, Geordi will be like, oh, we can't do that because of yada, 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 technobabble. And, like, there's a lot of, like well, we don't know that as viewers. You're just making it seem harder by throwing in technobabble kind of thing.
Yeah, that's
true. So, like, the whole, like, oh, we have to lock all the teleporters. It's not like anybody, I mean, okay, fine. Maybe somebody would be like, well, why didn't they do this? But at the same time, as a viewer, you're like, you don't necessarily have... You don't have the knowledge that the show does, so
it's not a super obvious problem.
They can just tell
problem.
You that okay, there's another way to do this, and you have to believe that. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah.
So they kind of make up things quite often. It seems like padding when they do that kind of stuff.
And they also the other person solves it immediately. Like
exactly,
it's not like any time passed where they realized that this was going to happen. O'Brien realizes it immediately after they say
it. They
do
that all the time.
Yeah.
Geordi's kind of the spoiler with that because somebody will say, why can't we do this? And Geordi will be like, can't do that because of this. And like, okay, that took 3 seconds we didn't take then.
Right.
Thanks, everybody.
Yep.
So it's just padding, it feels like, sometimes.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. It's definitely just to, I think it's designed just to make things seem more complicated than.
And that's what it is, yeah. So in the writing, they want to make it seem harder than it, because if it seems too easy to come to the conclusion, then it's like, oh, well, why didn't you think of that sooner?
Yeah, yeah.
But by throwing in obstacles that you're overcoming and objections you're overcoming, even if they're nonsense, it still makes it seem more difficult somehow.
Yes, yep, totally agree with that. Yeah, it's a fun little caper episode, I guess, is the way I describe it. It's not particularly the deepest of Star Trek episodes or anything, but I think it executes on a level that's very good for what the episode's trying to do, which is a lot of fun and interesting. All right, well, do you have anything else you want to run to final thoughts?
Final scores.
All right, after this break, me and Modi are going to come back and give our final thoughts and ratings for Power Play.
As though my own consciousness were pushed to the side. I was watching everything happen, hearing my own voice, but not being able to control any of it.
What about the entity that controlled you? What were your perceptions of him?
He was intelligent, actually. Thoughtful in a ruthless kind of way. Cold.
Lieutenant, I must apologize for my inadvertent misconduct toward you.
No apology necessary.
Your restraint was most remarkable.
You have no idea.
Power Play, a wonderfully little executed action-adventure, which... to me, it feels like we had a rough patch before this of episodes. I feel this one feels like I remember later seasons of TNG. It's like well executed, I guess would be the way to describe it. I'm going to give this one a 4. I think it's like a strong 4. It's almost the only thing holding it back is that it's, I guess it's not as deep as I would expect a 5 to be. It's sort of a simple concept. I think it's just executed really well. So I'm going to give it a strong 4. What'd you think?
I was going to be in the same ballpark. I was going to say 4 as well because it's a strong episode, especially given the stuff that's come before this in this season, last couple episodes here. And I mean, it's not a 5 because it doesn't. Yeah, it's missing that third heat kind of thing. Like it doesn't have that emotional response kind of thing.
You get from other
Star Trek. I mean, it doesn't have the. It doesn't, for even though there's all these people at risk, it doesn't seem like there's enough peril. There doesn't seem like there's enough emotional connection with
the crew. Yeah.
And to bring it to like really that third heat of a 5. But
yes,
I would say a very strong 4, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good way to sum it up. It's I can't really define what makes a 5. It's very hard.
Yeah.
But
you know what we see it. It's like
you
pornography.
Do. Yeah, it is. It's like pornography. It's helpful to be watching both when you're watching. It's I think it's definitely something you need a little bit. There needs to be a little bit of emotional heft to a five.
Yeah.
Looking back on my fives, that seems to be the case for all of them. I talked with Clay about... I was wondering if if it's possible to have a very epic episode that's not a five. Because I think some people... if something is very grandiose, it seems to imply that it's better than it might be, if that makes sense. And I worry that sometimes a lot of the fives on this show are me just taking the most epic episode and being like, oh, well, this is definitely
a
five.
Yes.
But if all the episodes were like that, they would no longer be fives, which is kind of a weird argument, but that's the interesting thing.
Compare this to something like Darmok, which would be a five for me.
Yeah.
Like, there's something else going on there.
Right.
I don't know. And like you said, this has the risk of being just the kind of epic story that you'd have to give a five, but yeah, I guess it's missing the emotionality, and then also this could be a three if it's executed poorly.
Yeah,
so it's executed so well that it takes it from a three to a four kind of thing.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Interesting. Well, we both agree it's a 4 out of 5. It's a solid episode. I really enjoy this one. It's fun. But guys, thank you very much for. I wanted to talk about things too. Jesus Christ, what the hell's wrong with my brain? Anyway, it's kickstarting. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the content, you're on YouTube, like and comments. Appreciate it. If you're on iTunes, rating, review helps get the show out there. I did want to mention there have been some really good comments on YouTube recently, and there's someone whose name is Event Horizon who puts a lot of good comments, and I can't respond to you, so it's not like I'm ignoring. It's something about your YouTube settings. I cannot reply to your comments. So I just wanted to mention I appreciate your comments, Event Horizon. Thank you for doing it. You had left a good comment on the Violations episode. I might disagree with you, but it was a good comment anyway. So, Modi, thank you very much for joining me.
No problem.
And we will be back with Ethics in a couple days, which I wonder if that is about some kind of moral quandary with a title like Ethics.
I would imagine so. Yeah.
Imagine so. Anyway, guys, thank you very much for watching. Check out Modi's channel, and I will see you later.